Hey, everybody. As the co-host of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, it's always delightful to shoot the transatlantic breeze with the UK Midweek Drive team. Together, we aim to provide the best possible audio backdrop for political sanity in the 21st century. This is Phil Lairness, reporting from the middle ground between science and superstition. And you have entered the podcast zone.
Well, yesterday we had a fun time with Sarah Huntley and Pamela Sue Mann. Pamela was obviously driving up New York State, etc., as is the Midweek Drive. And we're wondering, what's happened to the awesomely talented Eddie McClintock? He's got to be sort of there somewhere, in some way, shape or form. Clearly, we had to put this out. Thankfully, we've arranged it now. So together with Chloe Rose and Hannah O'Brien, we can welcome to the Midweek Drive for his debut on the whole programme. Yes, Renaissance man himself. It's Eddie McClintock. How are you, Eddie?
I'm good, guys. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's an absolute delight to connect with your good self. I have to say that I'm sort of pushing very strongly with my students now that we should actually start the campaign to bring back Warehouse 13. But there are so many other delightful things that are actually in there, which we'll talk about in the program today. Chloe, I'm going to come to you first. A singer-songwriter. Was it the first time you've actually seen Eddie in action today in terms of Warehouse 13?
It has. And do you know what? It's awesome. I absolutely love his character. And as Pete, I think it was great. I watched it was like an episode. It was called Grand Designs One. It was Warehouse 13. And it was where you end up turning into these like cardboard cutout types of characters. Yeah. You end up unlocking this artificial thing. Anyway, I thought it was brilliant. But it had me hooked when I watched it. So I'll be watching more as well, definitely.
That's the webisode, Eddie. So great stuff on that point of view. I mean, I was thinking we could go for your role.
That's it.
We could go for your role as a Kree commander in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We could go for, obviously, your role in Supergirl. We could go for your Desperate Housewives. I mean, there are so many things that you've actually got for the whole sort of process. I mean, actor, director, as I said, Renaissance man. And I have to say, although it is radio, very impressed with the Incredible Hulk background that you've got as well. This shows quality.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I kind of, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
And it's so strange you should say that, Eddie, because literally in 48 hours from now, we're featuring Kenneth Johnson, Kenny Johnson, of course, the creator of the Incredible Hulk television series. So he's joining us. So obviously you're using the power there to actually connect with the joys of Kenny Johnson as well. It's great.
My vibes.
Oh, those Pete Latimer vibes just continue left, right and centre in so many delightful ways. Eddie, you're in Los Angeles at present. Just to set the scene, Hannah O'Brien is an ace graduate of the University of Lincoln, but she's currently based in Gloucestershire, which, if you're speaking American, would be Gloucestershire, basically. But right. Gloucestershire is how we say it now. Right. And Chloe is actually over in Cleethorpes prepping for the release of her latest single, which again will be sort of featuring all sorts of ways, an ace singer-songwriter as well. So there we are. That's so we kind of know where we are.
So I'm in good company then.
Well, you know, metaphysically, philosophically, it's all part and parcel of the whole thing. Eddie, there's so many things we can sort of squeeze in. We're going to try and do the best over the next half hour or so. But is it true that you once said to, of course, your screen mom, Captain Janeway herself, Kate Mulgrew, did you say to her when she joined the cast of Warehouse 13, has anybody told you about the nude scenes?
I think I remember saying that to Jerry Ryan, who played my wife. I don't recall. I may have to plead the fifth on that one, but I do know that. I was really kind of gobsmacked. Like all these amazing guest stars started coming on the show, particularly from Star Trek Next Gen. We had Brent Spiner and Renee Bourgeois and Jerry and Kate and that's kind of when things started getting real for me. You know, I'm like, wait a minute, these people are coming on my our TV show to help us. Oh, look at that. There you go. There's the background.
Yeah, I figured it was time we actually changed the whole thing. You're just hiding behind there, your presence. Yeah, so there
I look like Peter Boyle from Young Frankenstein. I've always had that kind of pre-Cambrian brow, you know, kind of Australopithecus head. But we had some really amazing guest stars, and I'm sure that I said plenty of inappropriate things to each and every one of them.
They wouldn't return. They would not have returned. And again, it's looking at it now, I mean, I cannot believe it's 8 years since the series wrapped. And obviously some 13 years since the series actually started. And it was something which, is this the time zone? Is the artifact here from that point of view? But it still has a freshness, which, as we were saying with a recent Resonance Rewind, it connects in the way that this is the natural precursor to Stranger Things. I mean, without Warehouse 13, Stranger Things.
I was at a convention this past weekend and met a lady. She was like, here, I want to show you a picture of the first time we met. And she showed me, and she was just a little girl. And now she's, graduated from college, getting married. So it's...
they grow up so quickly, Eddie. I mean, I found
really
this over the years.
They really do.
I mean, first time I encountered Hannah, she was just a child, a babe, just a child from the whole, and now it's a whole new world, basically. It's just
a babe in the woods.
Yeah, exactly. Let's turn back to Hannah, in fact. But Hannah, any questions you'd like to put to Eddie? I'm presuming you haven't seen Warehouse 13.
I haven't, but actually I've been doing my research on it, and it does sound something that would be right up my street. So I've been chatting to a few friends, asking if they'd seen it. And I think we're actually going to organise a watch party to watch all the way through, because several of them said that it sounded great. So there you go. You've got some new fans already, Eddie.
Oh, well, I hope you enjoy it. I was just over in Liverpool with the Scousers, huh? Right? Is that right? Scousers?
Yeah.
Home of the Beatles.
We have a nice little following in the UK, and back in the day, we used to come over to the UK and do promos for Sci-Fi UK, and had an amazing time. I almost got arrested at Big Ben? I know it's the Parliament building. Is that
the Houses of Houses of Parliament, Westminster, all of those kind of things?
My wife and I climbed up on the bridge. We climbed up on the railing and we're hanging off one of the lights so that we could get into the picture with the clock.
Of course.
And as one does. And then next thing I know, the Bobby was cussing at me and grabbed me by my neck and was going to take me to jail. So I had to beg.
Well, you know, Eddie, how welcoming the police can actually be in Great Britain in so many ways, basically. Particularly with former members of the colonies. I mean, it's all of us very good.
Yes. You know? The Yankee, he was going to take he let me go. He let me stew in my own sauces there for a minute, but then finally let me go. So all in all, a good experience.
Yeah, I mean, all you needed to do was to take out the Farnsworth, get in touch with Artie.
Right.
Problem solved. Surely it's just an artifact gone wrong. Probably a policeman's truncheon.
Could have nailed him with the Tesla. You know.
Yeah, that's a whole new world. Chloe, any questions you'd like to run at this stage?
Yeah. So what made you want to be an actor? Because obviously you're amazing at it, of course, but how did you love for that, the theater, film, stuff like that? When did it happen for you?
I grew up kind of being the class clown, I guess, as they call it. Was never really a great student, although I do have a college degree. I moved to Los Angeles to sell corporate insurance for my uncle. And then he fired me after 6 months.
Oh, no.
I was not a great insurance salesman. And, you know, I mean, I had a lot of growing up to do. I was partying a lot, drinking a lot. And then I decided to get sober. So I've been clean and sober for 22 years. And that's kind of when, you know, the fog lifted for me. I got into acting class because a friend of mine was going to take an acting class, and she said, you should come take an acting class with me. And because all of my friends now had disappeared because I no longer was doing all the things that I used to do, I just started taking class and going to class pretty much every night. And for a couple of years, that's all I did. And I realized that it was something that I not only that enjoyed, but that I was, you know, I was fairly competent at, and I was having success in the rooms with my peers. And then I started booking commercials. I did some, ironically, my first national commercials. The first two were beer commercials. So, you know.
Yes, but you're an actor, Eddie. You can actually translate that whole thing without going through the whole notion of Stanislavski and method acting. You say, I've been there, I've done it, I can cope with this.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, as a kid, I always liked to, you know, perform for my mom and do different accents and voices for my mom. So I think it was always kind of there. I was an athlete growing up. So it was never really presented to me, you know, being an actor wasn't anything that, you know, in Ohio, in the Midwest, that wasn't anything that was a reality for me. So it became a reality after I moved to California and had gotten fired by my uncle.
Well, it's a good job he did fire you, because look at you now, you're doing amazing. So
yeah,
you
yeah.
You're welcome.
I did a film that I was really proud of, and you know, we had the premiere, and I invited my aunt and uncle, and I got to speak before the film, and I got to, you know, basically apologize and also say thank you to them. So we've buried the hatchet, and he does all our insurance now. So
you say a happy ending. That's the important thing. It's almost that you're working for Disney. Maybe not. Let's move on, because the thing you actually mentioned there, Eddie, it ties in very much with your character, called Eddie Latimer, who, I mean, I think I've seen an interview where you said there's, Where does Eddie begin and Eddie McClintock sort of end, and obviously Pete Latimer end, etc. And he said there's a lot of connections, because obviously Pete Latimer in character was somebody who basically had before he joined the CIA, before he joined the Secret Service and so on, he'd had a failed marriage, he was an alcoholic, there was always an allusion to him falling off the wagon, etc. Was that something that obviously fed into the role, or was it always in mind when obviously Jack Kenny kind of came up with the line, and it was written in the first place?
It was not initially in there. You know, David Simpkins was our show runner, our exec producer for the pilot. And if you'll notice that the tonally, the pilot is really, because initially the show was supposed to be more along the lines of, you know, X-Files, kind of serious and brooding, you know, kind of like what sci-fi does. And then they realized who they had hired. And I think
that Joanne Kelly, she could be a disaster, obviously, let's face it, you know, I mean, yeah, fundamentally, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, it was kind of, we became the Laurel and Hardy, you know, she was my straight man. And for better or for worse, as far as she was concerned. So there's a pretty big tonal shift as you start to move through the episodes from the pilot. I had meetings with Jack. I had known Jack from my first series ever back in 97, which was actually an adaptation of a British comedy called Holding the Baby. And so Jack was one of the producers on that. So he knew me pretty well already. And we sat and talked, and he just started putting in pieces of me into Pete. Slowly but surely, my sobriety coincided with Pete's at the time, and other things like, you know, comic books and, you know, pressing buttons and licking things and, you know, just being a child,
a 5-year-old in a 28-year-old's body or whatever.
Yeah. So it was perfect for me. Like my whole, Hey, that was something that I used to say around the set, you know, in the mornings I'd show up and be like, Hey. And all of a sudden there it was in the script. And so the line between Pete and myself is pretty blurry.
We were talking on the show yesterday, obviously in your absence, Pete, but that's okay. We referred to his character.
When I stood you up yesterday.
I didn't think it was a chance. It was literally a case of I felt that obviously something had cropped up. There was an emergency. As long as you were okay, all's well with the world. That's the important thing. And funny enough, we do have reference actually Sarah Huntley had a similar situation, but she'd locked herself out of her house and she'd left her phone in the house, etc. So I thought anything could have happened, you know. So these things, you know, occur. You know, it's live broadcasting. It's the magic of radio. But I'm interested in terms of how, again, you were sort of shifting in terms of that, as you said, the tonal shift, the areas within that, because the fun nature of the thing comes across. Now, again, it's something which lots of actors, lots of shows, lots of directors say, it's the happiest show on earth. Everybody's happy with this whole thing. Leonard Nimoy, original Star Trek series, you can't catch lightning twice in a bottle, etc. But Warehouse 13 does have this buzz that sort of works through, which, to be honest, I could see the X-Files references in the early sort of part of the whole thing. But it became much better because it became lighter. It became, you know, it, as you said, the tonal shifts actually sort of gave it a play. I'm a spoiler alert here for obviously Hannah and the crew and Chloe as they become newbies to Warehouse 13. But by the time you get to the end of season 5, the 6-episode season 5, and that final episode with 42nd Street, your speech actually had me in tears, actually, in terms of the sort of connection within that. I think the way that the sort of the structure and obviously Jack Kenny's editing the whole thing, it kind of resonates not only with us as human beings when things pass and everything goes on, but even the fade out, where obviously as the leading man of the series, you're the last person to effectively fade out before we cut to the future 10 years and all the rest of bits and pieces. It's not really a question, it's an observation. But was that something that kind of you felt was connecting within the whole field?
Well, you know, I also teach some acting classes, you know, and I one of the first things I like to say is, you know, a lot of people think that acting is, you know, you're pretending to be someone else. And when you're pretending to be someone else, you're not telling the truth. For me, acting is about telling the whole truth. So that scene in particular for me is a good example. I mean, I was living my life, my lived experience through Pete Latimer. As I said, there were times in my life where I didn't think, because of, you know, my drinking and my partying and all that, that, you know, I was ever going to amount to anything. And the fact that I had come so far and had been given the responsibility and the opportunity to lead this wonderful show with these wonderful cast of misfits. It was a huge honor for me. And so that scene at the end there is is less about Pete Latimer, in my mind, is less about Pete Latimer telling his friends thank you, and much more about me being able to tell those people that had been on that journey with me and had allowed me to be who I am, and saying thank you to them. And so, and I, Jack, you know, Jack came up to me before we started shooting that scene, and he said, he goes, okay, now you're never gonna see these people ever again. All right. And action. And I just lit, I'm a pretty emotional guy. You know, I tend to wear my heart on my sleeve, and I was like, I started, you know, I couldn't get through it. So Jack was like, okay, cut, cut, cut. And he's like, okay, can we do a little less crying? And I'm like, you started this, man. You know, this is your fault. So, you know, what you see is what you get there. And that's most of the show for me, at least, is, you know, I had been given an opportunity to really show the world who I was as a person. And I loved the fact that Pete could still be a child and still love the things that he loved when he was a kid. Like, as we do, I still love the Incredible Hulk. That's why I have it in my background. You know, I have a little Hulk on my backpack, and, you know, I love going to conventions and seeing what other people are into, you know, people that have still feel connected to their childhood. But at the same time, when it's time to be an adult and do adult things, that you know, we can do both without, you know, one's not mutually exclusive from the other.
Well, a cast with Saul Rubinek in there as well isn't bad. CC Pounder, I mean, you're working up the process from that sort of perspective. Alison, yeah, of course, doing wondrous things from that point of view. And Joanne Kelly, as we mentioned. So, you know, I think the magic was there. You did definitely capture lightning in the bottle. We need a movie. I mean, that's all I have to say. The movie needs to be made.
I, you know, they're doing a Warehouse 13 marathon here on Sci-Fi. 2 weeks ago, they did the first season. Then last week, they did the second season, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I'm hoping that maybe, you know, because it's all about numbers, right? It's all about the numbers. So, you know, my hope is that the numbers are good enough that it behooves Sci-Fi to revisit Warehouse 13 in some capacity, whether it be, you know, a little two-part movie or maybe a short series, just to catch up with everybody and see where we're absolutely all at.
Let's switch series slightly. Your role as the Kree commander in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, Chloe is a big Marvel fan, I think it's fair to say, from that point of view. So he's alerted on that side of things there. How did it feel actually sort of parachuting into a show, as you did obviously with Supergirl, as you did with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., etc.? I mean, personally, I'd like to see what happened to that Kree commander. Where is he now? And all the rest of its pieces. So, you know,
with my accountant.
Yeah, and if Kevin Feige is listening to this, and who knows, he may be, you know, it's time we actually said, you know, Kevin, Eddie couldn't reprise the role of the Kree commander. You know, that's what we need. Phase 5 of the Marvel Universe needs it.
Yeah, as long as they gave me a bigger truncheon this time. I mean, like, I had this, like, I was like, what? You know, Thor has his hammer. You know, I had truncheon envy. And so
you had to go head to head with the Lady Sif as well. I mean, you know, it's difficult times.
Yeah, Drew Greenberg, who was one of the exec producers on Warehouse 13 after its resolution, went over to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And he called me and asked me if I wanted to come over and do an episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. and play a Kree. And it was really cool. They did the digital mapping of my face, obviously, because I had to turn blue. And then, And so I had to learn, you know, in this scene, I don't know if you remember, but I'm standing in the middle of, like, you know, Operation Zebra there at the SHIELD office, and I'm standing and all the SHIELD assets are standing around me, and I'm telling this story about the Kree and about, you know, the dilithium crystal or whatever and all that stuff. And it was a lot of stuff that, you know, foreign words that didn't really make sense to me. And so I'm in there trying to learn all these words. And then Drew called me and he was like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm trying to learn these words for tomorrow." And he goes, "Okay, don't learn any of those words. Marvel has stepped in and said that the episode is too close to what they're trying to do in one of their movies. So we have to rewrite the whole thing." And I was like, okay. So when will I get the words that I have to know for tomorrow? And he was like, "We'll get them to you as soon as possible." So I went to bed at like 11. I had to be up at 4:30 or 5 to be at the studio by 6 in the morning. And so I didn't know any of the words to that scene, which is, as an actor, especially for me,
let's face it, we can't all go back to what Marlon Brando did in Superman. That's not going to work, really.
Yeah, I mean, no one was willing to write all my lines down and stick them to their chest. So, I mean, in the entirety of my career, that was the most terrifying day of my career, because, you know, the thing is, the crew doesn't know. The crew just assumes that, you know, like,
it's an actor. Like, they're doing their stuff.
Why doesn't he know any of
this? Maybe
Vintac,
the Kree warrior, but he's still got to say the words.
And so, you know, it was, that was tough. I felt like I was standing in front of them completely naked on the coldest day in winter. And, you know, I'm Scots Irish. So there would have been some shrinkage involved. And so not only was I naked, but, you know, with shrinkage.
It sounds as though it's an ideal scene for Chloe's next music video, I would have thought, actually. I mean,
shrinkage. Yeah. Shrinkage. Keep an eye out on your dinkage.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
You know, you can have it.
You can sample that one.
Absolutely. I will do.
But once I got past that day, really cool. I was able to be part of the Marvel universe. And then I went over to Supergirl and played Colonel James Harper in Supergirl, who...
A bit of a hard ass, to be honest, Eddie. Bit of a hard ass, really.
Yeah. So, you know, I've...
Probably had to channel your inner uncle from that point of view in terms of, I'm an insurance salesman. I will sort this out, Kara Danvers, because I'm an insurance salesman. You claim to be from Mars. What insurance do you have on Mars, you know?
Exactly. I've been really fortunate and really lucky. And it's just something I've always reminded myself, you know, whenever I feel like I'm getting too big for my britches, as they say, which isn't often, but, you know, it's like, look, I'm lucky, I'm fortunate. There, my the alternative to where I could have ended up is much, much darker. So I always try and just be grateful for the opportunities that I've been given.
I mean, there are so many sort of recent stuff we'd love to talk about. Joey and Rex Save the Church, Just Swipe, Chosen, Reboot Camp, etc. I mean, clearly, in terms of that, you know, the quality is still there. We want to know, when are we going to see these things sort of manifesting in all sorts of ways?
Yeah, you know, I've been doing these little movies. I just directed my first film, which was incredible. It was the first time in a few years now where I just, like, I really felt like I was being able and given permission to be really creative and do my own thing. And that was amazing. So I hope that I get that opportunity again. I love working with actors. I love helping actors find out how to get to places emotionally that, like I said, you know, acting for me is about telling the truth, and you know, it's pretty amazing when you see the lights come on for actors, when you kind of go, you know, you don't ever want to give an actor a line reading, right? Because then you're not giving them the ability to create on their own, but you're, you know, for me, I try and say, okay, well, what if we think about this part of your life and then connect that to this scene and apply it to this scene and have them go, oh, wait, I'd never thought about that in that way. And that's exciting for me. Because, you know, I know how it feels as an actor to kind of have that revelation and go, there's a endorphin an adrenaline dump that happens. That's you know, it's pretty good. Well, it doesn't cost you anything.
It's all part about life, and you can miss it if you don't peek up every so often to see all sorts of other areas. Are you a Trek fan, by the way, Eddie?
A what?
Star Trek. Do you follow Star Trek? Mentioned the Incredible Hulk.
Excuse me. Yeah, the original series.
I'm glad you said that, because in many ways, what you do on Warehouse 30 has got so many nods in that direction, etc. Somehow we could debate where things are under Alex Kurtzman, but we won't, because we haven't got 3 days to actually start putting it right. It's another line entirely. Chloe, yeah. What particular piece of music would you like us to bring into this little piece, so that when Eddie gets to hear the show in its entirety, he can actually say, so that's what Chloe Rowe sounds like when she sings.
Oh. I don't know whether to let you decide. Shall I pick one? Oh, no. Gosh. Probably Hopes and Dreams.
Hopes and Dreams.
And Sky is Falling. One or the other.
Can I go on YouTube and check those out?
Living on borrowed time. choose what I can be, what I can do.
It's Chloe Rose, Chloe Rose, and it's on there. But crikey, you don't need to check it out, do you? I mean, you're awesome. I mean, that makes me smile that you actually want to have a look, to be honest.
Well yeah, God, whatever. I want to be able to say, hello, I know Chloe Rose, whatever. So CH.
Oh, God. Make my day.
We shall send the links over. We'll connect with her. Okay,
great.
Hannah, any final thoughts and questions for yourself already?
So we've obviously talked a lot about superheroes, supernatural. Eddie, we know that you love the Hulk, but if you could have any superhero power other than the Hulk's, what would you pick?
Gosh, does it have to be a pre-existing superpower?
No, you can create your own if you want to.
Well, I can apply it. I can apply it this way. I'll apply it toward an artifact.
Not the Iron Shadow's underpants, surely.
Yeah. Well, you know, or the spine of Sarazen. You know. No. I always used to say if I had an artifact, which has its own superpowers, right? I mean, basically, it would be. To have Janis Joplin's backstage pass from Woodstock. Janis unfortunately passed away because of she drank too much, which again kind of is has a special ring for me. But if you had that backstage pass, you could go to any concert, you could travel to any concert. And I could go back and see The Who and Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin and like Emerson, Lake and Palmer or the Moody Blues or like all the music that I grew up with.
Terrifically awesome. Any particular musical style you'd like us to sort of weave into the piece as well? Are you looking for fanfare for the common man? Are you looking for where would you go for?
We got to go with Chloe's music for sure.
Very kind, very kind indeed.
You know, keep the family together.
Okay, we will work on that. Well, it's brought us neatly round to the two final questions. First of all, Eddie McClintock, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on this, your debut midweek drive?
This has been an incredible Zoom experience. I really appreciate it. And again, I want to apologize for yesterday. I'm always honored and grateful to be asked to come to the party, you know, so to be here with you guys and to have you guys take an interest in what I do, that's to me is a big honor. So I really appreciate it.
Well, it's been a genuine delight for us, basically. So Chloe, has it been all right for you? Have you enjoyed the last few moments?
Oh. I've loved it. I'm starstruck. I'm actually starstruck over it. So, yeah, it's lovely to, you know, it's been very interesting. I've enjoyed it.
And very of course, good. Eddie McClintock in real life, as opposed to an animated version with a voiceover. It's great. Yeah. You know, it's a whole new webisode, really.
It's live on the internet.
So spooky. Hannah, has it been good for you?
Oh, yes, lovely. And I can't wait to go and binge the whole of Warehouse 13.
Only 64 episodes, 64 magical bites of goodness there. So go for the whole thing, available in all sorts of ways. So we look forward to hearing your comments on that. Eddie, the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to join us again? Will you be kind enough to return sometime?
I would love to. I'd love to. You know, and Chloe, when you get to the top, remember us little guys, you know.
Oh, crikey. Oh, gosh. Honestly, you make my day. I don't know what to say. Thank you very much. You're doing awesome. You're up. You're great. Thank you.
Everybody's wonderful. Aww. That's the whole thing. Hannah O'Brien, yeah. Chloe Rose.
Let's all join hands.
Exactly. Eddie McClintock, we're feeling that force. Take care. Be well. Be safe. And keep on keeping on.
Take care.
Do you ever wake up from a dream? Look out the window. Scared what you might say. 'Cause we're waiting for.
Let me take you by the hand and take you through the streets of London. I'll show you something that'll make you change your mind, especially if you travel at 175 miles per hour via an e-system. Of course, it's the e-Prix that's coming through to London, and we're delighted to actually discuss what we can expect after, of course, New York was such a success for this London e-Prix. We're speaking, of course, to the fabulous Avalanche Andretti race car driver. That's Jake Dennis. How are you, Jake?
I'm very well. How are you?
Well, great to connect with your good self, and fascinated by this whole side of things, because certainly this puts the nod in the direction of, for anybody who says, I'm not going to actually drive an electric vehicle, you just don't get the same sort of power as you get with an e-car, as you get with a petrol fuel car, etc. This clearly proves them wrong.
Yeah, very much so. You know, obviously the likes of electric racing cars and the likes of electric road cars now are moving on so much. And yeah, I think the acceleration in electric cars is actually nothing which can beat it, to be honest. You know, you've got these electric cars now which can pump out like 1,000 brake horsepower. It's pretty impressive. And obviously I get the luxury of actually driving a Formula E race car in some of the best locations. Obviously, as you mentioned, we've got this year, this weekend coming up in London, my home race. So very much looking forward to jumping back in the car and seeing how competitive we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, looking at the New York City E-Prix, of course, I see it was Antonio Felix da Costa from Portugal who actually took the number one position from that side of things there. Is he somebody who's going to be one to look out for?
Yeah, obviously, Antonio has won the championship in season six, so a couple of years ago now. And obviously, he's a good friend of mine. He's a great guy, and he's very much a happy-go-lucky guy in the paddock. Yeah, he's obviously going to be a contender, but you know, you've got the likes, obviously, the top four in the championship, which doesn't include Antonio. The title fight this year is incredibly tight, and you know, you've got these guys going race after race, finishing in, like near the front, and yeah, I think they're only separated by like 20 points, and there's still 100 points up for grabs. So it's yeah, going to be exciting. London E-Prix is obviously always a great race. You've got this whole unique element of racing, obviously indoor and outdoor. And you never really know how the weather's going to play out. Because obviously, if it starts to rain, the outdoor section is going to be quite a bit different in terms of drivability, racing the actual car, obviously, on a wet surface to dry surface, obviously, on the inside. So, yeah, just very much looking forward to really getting this weekend started to try and replicate what we achieved last year with trying to get the win. And, yeah, hopefully we can put out a good package.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, for these those folk who are looking at who is currently number one, it's Stoffel Van Doorn from Belgium, who's actually in the lead. And as you rightly say, only a mere 11 points ahead of Switzerland's Eduardo Mortara. So all sort of good from that point of view. I mean, I'm sure, Jake, you'll be there. It's just you've obviously been letting them win, and that's the, you know, you've been, you know, being too much of a gentleman from that point of view. But that's okay. You know,
gentlemen.
Yeah, that's it's all part and parcel of the whole thing. Now let's talk a little bit more about this fabulous sort of notion about driving around city streets. As you said, Formula E doesn't use traditional racetracks, etc. And yeah, I mean, normally 175 miles an hour through the streets of London, you're not going to actually sort of survive many licenses, or you're going to get a fair number of points on your license for that. But in this instance, it is different. Is it stressful? Is it exciting? Is it a mixture of both?
It's not too stressful. It's just exciting. It's like you've got the thrill, you've got the pressure, and you know, you put all them together. Generally, just makes a great experience for a racing driver. I think that's why we all do it. We all enjoy driving race cars fast, but also just the whole pressure environment we put on ourselves and the team put on us to deliver week in, week out is part of it. But yeah, it's like you said. The locations you race at in Formula E are so good. We've just come off the back of some amazing locations. We race in Jakarta, New York, and Marrakesh, and now we're going to London and then South Korea. So honestly, the calendar for this year and even next year is looking incredible. So yeah, you get to race in, you know, the streets of New York, and you don't really get to beat that. And yeah, racing obviously through the XL this weekend, it's just a whole new element of racing and what Formula E brings. And yeah, just driving these race cars through the streets on these narrow walls, like zero margin for error. Obviously, and there's 22 of you doing it, trying to do it as quickly as possible. It always creates an action-packed race and obviously qualifying sessions. So very much looking forward to just getting stuck in this weekend and doing the job for my Avalanche Andretti team. And hopefully we can have a good result and yeah, continue this momentum what we've built.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's two rounds, of course, round 13 on the Saturday, round 14 on the Sunday, and then off to Seoul, as you said, for the biggest ever 16 race season. I mean, again, it seems only yesterday that the whole thing came to the fore, and I think there was a certain amount of scepticism in 2014 when Formula E was effectively established. But here we are, literally 8 years later, and it does seem to be getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone was skeptical when it first came out, like you said, in 2014. But we're here with season 8. We're just about to finish Gen 2, so version 2 of the car. They came on so much from even just 6 years ago when they were having to like swap cars mid-race because the battery wasn't capable of, you know, lasting the entire race. But now, you know, these cars pumping out serious power for the whole 45-minute race, and obviously no car change. And then the biggest thing for next year is obviously we've got Gen 3 coming out. So version 3, it's lighter, it's faster. And yeah, I think that's what the fans want to see. They want to see these cars go to the next level now and what the technology can do. And the software is just becoming more and more advanced. I think that's one of the coolest things with Formula E is just how much the software influences the car. You know, obviously all the powertrains are the same, but you've really got this software which can manipulate the car, change the balance of the car, and you can do that all mid-race as well. So it's very advanced for the driver, and honestly you should see the software manual for the car. It's as big as anything, so trying to learn that next year is going to be another challenge. So yeah, but just it's impressive how far and how quickly these cars have come, and they're only going to keep developing in that same direction.
We've seen in Formula One, of course, some very challenging incidences with respect to health and safety. I mean, clearly that is important. I mean, is it safe, Jake? I mean, in terms of that, because, you know, I'm sure there are people who say 175 miles an hour, human beings weren't built for that.
Yeah, you know, obviously these cars go for all this, the crash test. You know, they wouldn't be hitting the streets of London and New York if they weren't safe. So there's obviously
hitting
always a
the
risk
streets of is not perhaps the best line to use in this particular instance, Jake. But yeah,
you obviously going onto the streets. You know, these cars wouldn't be going on the streets if they weren't safe. You go for all this crash testing, but there's obviously always a risk of element. There's always a risk of anything, but you know, these cars are capable of serious impacts. Obviously, we don't want to see that, but generally, you know, the safety is always evolving in motorsport. You know, there was a big crash in Formula One. It's always the other weekend, and the driver managed to walk away unharmed. And it just shows how well these cars have developed from the FIA, and the safety structure of it all is just becoming better and better. And I think it's only going to keep moving forward in that direction as well.
Tickets for the London E-Prix are available for, basically from £49, so not too traumatic, hopefully, with respect to that. Who's going to win? Who in your own sort of opinion is going to sort of make it? I mean, other than yourself, because, I mean, obviously, you know, you've been gearing up for that, but, you know, who would you sort of say, well, this might be my nod?
You know, you've obviously got these four guys going toe-to-toe, week in, week out. It's very much looking like it's going to go down to the last race at the end of the year. Honestly, the four guys which are all fighting for the title are four very good friends of mine. So I have to be careful what I say, but yeah, it's looking like it's going to be a great title fight. I'd love to see either Mitch or Stoffel get one of the titles. Stoffel was really unlucky last year, and so was Mitch. So if those guys come out on top, then that's great to see. But yeah, I'm just also a fan myself. You know, the title fight this year is incredible. And obviously I'm not involved this year. We very much were last year, but this year it's just a few things didn't go for us. So, you know, you've got this title fight of top four. It's four races to go. You really don't know who's going to come out and win it. So I'm very excited just to witness it myself as well.
That's terrific. Actually connecting with you, good self. Presumably, FIAFormulaE.com is the best place to actually go to find out further details and keep up to date with Formula E.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, obviously you can get all these tickets through the Formula E website, FIAFormulaE.com. Super easy. And yeah, just choose your location where you want to sit. Great grandstands. Obviously it's a street circuit, so you get to see the cars actually come by for more than 1 second than like Formula One. So yeah, it's just a good location. Obviously, you've got the E-Village involved as well this year. And you've got some really good performances coming Saturday and Sunday with like some Jack Jones. So the fan engagement's going to be really big this year. You know, got the autograph session. You can come up and meet us, get anything signed. So and just have a general chat. So yeah, get involved, bring the kids down and watch some race cars drive around super fast.
Well, absolutely. And does it still have the same noise that you get in Formula World of Petrol? Because that was, again, something which people said, oh, electric cars, they're just so quiet, you can't hear them.
No, you obviously do miss that element of noise. They obviously do have like a buzz around them with the noise they've got. But yeah, they're not quite the likes of the V10s back in 1990s of Formula One. I think even, you know, the hybrid of Formula One has moved away from that. But yeah, you've just got to accept the way it is at the moment, and yeah, just, you know, enjoy the whole racing aspect of hearing different noises. You know, you get to hear these tires being pushed to the absolute limit through the corners, and yeah,
it's a whole,
and you hear the fans screaming.
Well, Jake, certainly, we wish you all the very best. Good luck with the London E-Prix. Good luck with Seoul, and indeed future work within the whole thing for Avalanche Andretti. Jake Dennis, ace Avalanche Andretti race car driver. Huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.